Okay. Dan, then go ahead and hit us with your I don't know if you want to do it in groups of five again, so hit us with your 11 through 15.
I'll do 11 through 15 just to let other people mention some people that might be in my 16 through 20 that I don't get to. Real quickly, I want to say that you brought up the night the line was crossed, and that three-way match that I want to say went an hour with Shane 40, Douglas.
45 minutes.
45 minutes, thank you. Shane Douglas, Sabu, and Terry Funk.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about this with the chronology, but people that don't understand, they think three-way match now, and they think, oh, God, another one of those. Those weren't done at that point. And
yeah.
That match was a real risk, and the fact that it was so fantastic really got ECW some attention with a number of people that may not have known about it otherwise, or at least it got it play in the magazines and in the, you know, I wasn't taking any insider references at that point, but I think it really helped ECW's image and name that those three pulled off such a great three-way match at that card. So I just wanted to
And just to reiterate something that I brought up too, the cast of characters you have in this match, Terry Funk, the old-timer that's lending the company credibility, Shane Douglas, the recent outcast of WCW with a bone to pick and a chip on his shoulder, and Sabu, the organically grown indie wrestler who's getting his first shot in the mainstream because WWF and WCW won't pick him up. I mean, that's like your three categories of wrestlers right there.
Yeah.
And they're able to coalesce and have this fantastic 45-minute match.
Yeah.
That really put them on the map. So, yeah.
Yeah. But 11 through 15, and I suspect I'll guess maybe two of these five are in your guys' 11 through 15 just because there is so much room for interpretation here. 11th, and maybe, you know, you guys are talking about Eric Koolis, maybe I should lower it because of that because I'm just looking at the positives. But I put New Jack. You know, another one that had some really good interviews, did do the company some damage, no question with that, but very compelling. And I could have put the Gangstas, but to be honest, New Jack was, you know, he was the reason you wanted to see that team. He was the one giving the interviews. He was the one. And you know, whether he was teaming with Cronus or whether he was teaming with, I think he teamed with Axel for a while. And no matter who he was teaming with, you know, he kind of would make those matches, I would say, more than the Dudleys again. I even as a tag team, I'd put the Gangstas ahead of the Dudleys maybe. But I think it was mostly New Jack and that, you know, well, he was a scary guy. I mean, it wasn't like he had to act like he was a badass. You know, I mean, you were like, damn, I don't know, this whole thing is kind of scary when you listen to this guy. So I had him 11th.
And Dusty, what was the one exception to the rule of New Jack being the more entertaining promo than Mustafa?
The time when New Jack was in jail. And
yep.
Mustafa pointed out that New Jack is tired of it now.
And then, yeah, Damian Kane and Miss Alexander come out. And I think they were going to, whoever they were managing was going to wrestle the Gangstas. And
who was it? Who was that team? I know you're, yeah.
It wasn't the Bruise Brothers.
No, they were not good. They were like, they were an East Coast indie team that was his team. And
yeah, I can't remember who it was. But as the interview continued, he was like, I know you need a job. I got a job for you. You can shine my shoes. And the New Jack, or Mustafa, grabs the microphone. He's like, yeah, I need a job. And then he turns to Alexandra. I need a hand job, baby.
Yeah, there was a reason he didn't do too much talking in general.
Yeah. Well, okay. So anyway, I just had to interject that.
Yeah, so
I remember a New Jack shoot where he's, like, watching some of his stuff and commenting on it. And there was a promo, and Mustafa starts talking. And whoever was interviewing him, Feinstein or whoever, what did he say right there? And New Jack's like, see, I have no idea. I couldn't tell half the time that motherfucker was talking.
Right.
No, he just kind of would make these nonsensical sounds at the end of New Jack's interview. He'd be like, okay, well, that was a Gangstas interview. That's fine.
Right.
Yeah.
He'd be like, bang!
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what he would do. That's right. So, but 12th, just to try and, because we're trying to keep things moving a little bit. 12th, I have Too Cold Scorpio. A big part of that is the NWA championship match with Shane Douglas. Kind of made it so much more credible that he would throw the belt down and you're like, here's this great NWA wrestling style match with two very credible guys, and then Shane Douglas wins and he cuts that promo, and it really added to it. Multi-time TV champion, good matches with Eddie Guerrero, Dean Malenko, all those guys.
Sabu,
absolutely. Shane Douglas, they had some matches. Had a good team for a fairly short period of time with the Sandman when they took the belts off the Public Enemy. Gave some good interviews. He kind of started in that WCW type. I'm Mark Alexander Bagwell's partner, pretty babyface guy, and then kind of found his stride a little bit more and always seemed to put on a pretty good match. And so, again, it was difficult where to place him, but I thought he deserved a spot above some of these other people. 13th, and people may not have him in the top 20, I don't know. I put Mikey Whipwreck.
Oh, yeah.
Great storyline, I think most people are familiar with. The guy couldn't do an offensive move, then he became TV champion, and then, pinned Steve Austin, won the world title from Sandman, and it was really neat. And his interactions with Cactus Jack were really good also, and I thought he was the right opponent for Cactus on his way out of ECW. They had a really good history, and he played his character very well. And then later, with Tajiri and Sinister Minister, did we lose Dusty?
He's back.
I'm back.
Okay. Later with Tajiri and Sinister Minister, I mean, he was a very good part of a compelling tag team. So, and Jim Mitchell and those guys gave some good interviews with Mikey too. So, that's I have him at 13th. 14th, the Eliminators, I thought were, I'll get to the Dudleys. I just thought it was cheap heat, a lot of the stuff they did with the crowd that you were talking about earlier. And yeah, it was kind of entertaining, but you were talking, I think Dusty was talking about how Cactus Jack stuff went on too long sometimes. There were times where I was like, geez, let's get to the freaking match. I mean, how long are you going to take 10 minutes to berate the crowd? I'm on a pay-per-view here. I don't give a shit. At some point, it's like, either go fight the crowd or shut the hell up. I'll just jump ahead. I put the Dudleys 20th because I felt like I had to put them in the top 20, but I don't have them at the level. I don't know. It'd be a big debate I was surprised you put Public Enemy behind them, but that's just my personal preference. So, but I did think the Eliminators were credible enough. I voted for him for Tag Team of the Year, I don't know how many times. And, again, you could see Wade Keller getting pissed all the time that people believed, or especially that John Williams guy that wrote for the Torch. They think they're the best.
Dusty's favorite. That's going to be part three of our
that
audio.
That guy, I shouldn't say that, but just so I don't want to buy your magazine for you to tell me how stupid I am. And I don't want to be put down all the time because – I respect your opinion. You can't. It's a freaking entertainment show. You don't have all the answers. We can all like different things. That doesn't make me a freaking moron. I got a PhD. I'm probably smarter than you, jackass. So shut up.
The only difference is I don't respect his fucking opinion.
Well, I try to.
Monkey with a computer.
I was like, why are they hiring this guy that just belittles the people? And it wasn't just me. It's all these people buying your freaking magazine. Tell them how stupid they are all the time. You can be respectful and disagree with people. You don't have to be a prick. I've had some reasonably pleasant interactions with him on the message board, so I hate to say it, but he was a jackass. He wrote like a jackass. He was just not a nice guy. Fuck. I mean,
he's self-important, takes himself way too seriously, and does not take into account that, God forbid, people like different kinds of
wrestling. No shit. And, and maybe I'm being a hypocrite, Eric. If I'm being a jackass to you about the Dudleys, I'm sorry.
That's
but, I could see where you're coming from, at least. Everybody's, I take strong disagreement to it, but damn. I had to read, these fucking idiots voting for the Eliminators, best tag team in the world. Well, who the hell did WCW have at the time? Who did WWF have at the time? Maybe they were allowed to do things that other teams didn't do, but Total Elimination was badass.
Yeah.
And it was mostly Saturn more than Cronus. I understand that, but You know, I love that when he shaved his head live on TV. He's like, you think you got to me by cutting my hair? And he's fucking, I guess that was to the gangsters. And he's shaving his head in front of the camera. I was like,
yep,
that's pretty cool. I mean, I look forward to those guys' matches. And the stuff they did with the gangsters, the stuff they did with the Dudleys. They had some stuff with Sabu and Van Damme, if I'm not mistaken. Very good, in my opinion.
Yep.
15th, another tag team. I have the Impact Players. I really thought that they, again, it could be argued at the time, were the best tag team in the world. I'd have to look at what WWF and WCW was pushing at the time. Maybe by then they had some really good tag teams. But, I mean, they had very good offense. Don Marie definitely added to their act. And part of it's getting Justin Credible on there because he was an ECW champion, and I never thought of him that much as a great single, but he and Lance Storm, I thought, really meshed. And Lance Storm had some really good stuff as a single, too. Wrestled RVD at the first pay-per-view and did some good things. And together, I thought that in a typical Paul Heyman way of booking, he took two guys that together were better than the sum of their parts. And they were very credible tag team champions and a different type of tag team for ECW, more of a, I mean, it's. I'm not trying to compare them to like Midnight Express or something, but more of a that type of like wrestling tag team that really put together some good matches and had good opponents at that time. That they had some good stuff in the TNN era. So I said 30 minutes from here on, so I'll stop. But that's my 11 through 15. Dusty, I think you heard me mention Too Cold Scorpio as 12, but if you cut off, then I'll
no, I was going to ask.
New Jack, Too Cold Scorpio, Mikey Whipwreck, The Eliminators, and The Impact Players. And to hear my wonderful reasoning for that, you can go back and listen to the audio.
Well, you know, I listened to it at least twice every audio I do.
I have a 6-hour drive ahead of me this weekend. I will I'll listen to it because, as I mentioned, I can't decide whether to listen to the Resolution stuff before I see it on TV or not.
Oh, yeah,
and I probably will, but I don't know. I've been putting that off because I'd like to just see it play out on PWO TV.
And I've actually got 8 hours of fucking around at work tomorrow since I'm not going to fucking do my job anymore. I got all the time in the world to listen to this. And actually, I'm just going to interject really quick. I actually have Justin Credible on the next, not the next part of my list, but the part after that. I can't really, really, really explain why I don't have Lance Storm in there, and I can't really, really, really explain why I don't have Chris Candido in there. But there's a weird like combination of three guys that, like you said, they're somehow managed to be greater than, how does that saying go?
The sum is greater than the whole of the parts.
Than the whole of the parts, yeah, exactly. The Impact Players were great. Lance Storm and Chris Candido might be one of my favorite tag teams of all time. And for some reason, I still don't have them in my top 20. So it's
and I didn't
funny
mean
how
to
we...
leave them out of that discussion either.
That's a different team, different year, different, you know.
Yeah.
But anyway, I just thought I'd throw that in there for the heck of it.
Yeah, I like the team with Credible a little bit better. But there's some people I'm leaving out, no question.
Yep. Dusty, 11 through 15.
All right, 11, I got New Jack also, so you can just ditto the thoughts that Dan laid out. Number 12, I've got the Eliminators. Yeah, they were a great team. Fuck JDW. I mean, they had a great style for ECW. It might not have worked anywhere else, but that's part of the magic of ECW. And yes, the head-shaving angle was awesome. It's just so intense and believable.
No, you're just doing it on TV. You're just like, it just came out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
You're just like, shit. You know, he didn't lose a match. He's just shaving his head. He's just like, you think you've gotten to me? No.
Yep. Let's see, what am I, 13? Stevie Richard.
Mm-hmm.
Great promo. He was funny. The tragic thing about Stevie Richards is that when he was ready to turn the corner and become a top guy for the company and get serious, that's when he got hurt.
Yep.
Yeah.
A tremendous lost opportunity. because he could have been top 10 if everything had worked out in his life.
And then they had that match where Chris Chetty kind of, like, didn't really work with him as well as he should have. It just, like, in a big comeback match. I'm like, you know, that's unprofessional shit.
He had heavy-duty heat in the locker room.
Yeah.
But you know what? Fuck Chris Chetty. You got to check your shit in the locker room and have a good match.
Fuck that.
Mm-hmm. Number 14, Mikey Whipwreck. Love the guy. Love the guy. Couldn't justify putting him higher, but I love him.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, it means I'm going to die.
He likes it. He really, really likes it.
that was my favorite Cactus promo ever.
Yeah, that was great.
Yeah.
And number 15, I got the Pitbulls.
Okay.
Another great tag team for ECW. Love them. They worked the hardcore style. They were fairly good workers. They're another team that came back and they sucked. Like Public Enemy came back and they sucked.
Mm-hmm.
But the magic of their first run makes me want to put them on the... You know,
well, and the angle with Gary Wolf and the head... The halo.
Yeah.
My God.
I mean,
you can just imagine if you were at the show that night that you would have lost it. I mean, I think a lot of people did. I mean, even though if you think about it, you're like, okay, well, probably his neck's not still fucked up or they wouldn't have done this, but you're just like, the way they, that was great.
Yeah. And best I know, I could be wrong. I've never, like, seen the screws in his head or anything like that, but I was under the impression that the halo was actually surgically implanted into his head. Who knows? Maybe it wasn't. I've never seen the screw.
Well, I think maybe it was necessary at a time, but I'm assuming. I don't think he pulled his halo when he actually could have rebroken his neck.
Yeah, sure.
I don't even think ECW would do that.
I should seriously hope not. All right. Well, my 11 through 15, let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4 of mine are on Dusty's list, and 2 are on Dan's list. I don't know. I know that I missed New Jack, and I know that I didn't put him in my top 20, and I guess I purposely did it. And I'm not going to regret it, but I completely agree with what you guys said about New Jack, even though he's not in my top 20. My number 11 is Stevie Richards, Dusty, for the reasons you mentioned. I mean, he was just such a goofy guy. He was a great lackey for Raven. He wrestled well. He cut great lackey-style promos. I mean, he was an awesome setup for Raven stuff. He was a good mouthpiece for, I mean, Raven spoke and he spoke well, very well, obviously, but there's something to be said about, it's kind of like the Bobby Heenan plus Mr. Perfect thing or a Bobby Heenan plus Bockwinkel and Stevens, you know, you have a great talker and you pair him up with another great talker. It's like magic occurs and, Stevie Richards cut some awesome promos and he ended up getting sympathy as Raven's lackey, you know, like, so-and-so wanted to be his girlfriend, and so-and-so didn't want to, and so-and-so, you know, whatever I'm trying to say. He had the whole woman thing going on. And then when he split off from Raven, and yeah, he was part of the other main event of Barely Legal and the three-way dance, you know, that was really cool. Stevie Richards, underrated, but apparently not by us.
The BWO was one of the most exciting things.
Yes.
Mind-blowing to me, like, holy shit, you know?
Yeah, that's the beauty of the Stevie Richards character was Raven was Raven, and Raven probably could have gotten over on his own, but he had this whole gang of characters behind him, and Stevie was kind of the leader of the gang of characters.
Yep.
And so when they'd start doing the Baron Von Stevie and the Kiss tribute and the BWO thing.
Fabulous Ones.
The Fabulous Ones, yeah, and then Cactus and Meanie and Stevie go strutting out of the ECW arena.
Yeah,
fantastic stuff. My number 12 is the break in the criteria that Dan laid out for us, but I actually have a little, I don't know, it's a replacement, and I should probably explain it a little bit. I put Joey Styles as my number 12. I know you said that you didn't want to do that and have announcers and managers and such in there. ECW.
They're mingling with each other. Mm-hmm.
The ECW, this is another guy that ECW would not have been ECW without Joey Styles. I say from personal experience, a large reason that I ordered ECW videotapes and that I enjoyed ECW videotapes was because of Joey Styles' commentary.
No question.
It was smart. It was funny. He took jabs at the opposition. He was great. However, for the sake of sticking with our criteria, I'm actually going to leapfrog an act out of my honorable mentions all the way up to number 12, only because you guys have sold me on these guys. The Public Enemy has got to go in my top 15. Like I said earlier, I already heaped praise on them earlier, but when my friends and I can pop in an ECW videotape when we're 13 and 14 years old and watch these two goofy white guys dance around the ring and then kick ass for like 20 minutes, they're just such a great act that it's impossible to deny. So if I had to replace Joey Styles with anybody, I would willingly leapfrog the Public Enemy over the rest of my top 20 list just to get them up there. Keeping the string alive of tag teams, though, number 13 and number 14, respectively, I say the Pit Bulls and the Eliminators. I put the Pit Bulls ahead of the Eliminators only because I knew of them first. They were there before the Eliminators. I believe it was my first Hostile City Showdown tape where Mikey Whipwreck was fighting. I'm pretty sure. No. He didn't fight one of the Pit Bulls. I think somebody stupid like Rockin' Rebel fought one of the Pit Bulls. I could look it up just to be 100% sure, but then the other Pit Bull came down and was like, there's Pit Bull number one! There's Pit Bull number one! And then from then on, it was like they cut the next tape I ordered. They were like the first promo of the show, and they're smacking their chain against the ring post, and they're part of a six-man tag team where they're just like tearing these like indie dudes apart at the seams. They're badass. Their promos were okay for what they were. They had Jason as their mouthpiece. They did a lot of cool stuff in the early my formative ECW years, and then they were followed by the Eliminators, who they were kind of like high spot, but they were also really good at what they did, and like you guys said, they were an excellent fit for ECW. Just a really good ECW-style tag team. And then my number 15 is Mikey Whipwreck, for all the same reasons.
That'd be your 16, because you put Public Enemy in.
We've taken Joey Styles out, though.
If I'm taking Styles out to put Public Enemy in, then I'm going to count Mikey Whipwreck as my number 15. It's just so great. It was just so great to see this little guy in his oversized dragon T-shirt and his stupid little shorts get beat up, and then finally punch Jason, finally win a match, finally win the TV title, win belts, partner up with Cactus, get the Cactus stamp of approval, and then, like Dan, like you said, turn into this weird pyromaniac character when the show finally went to TNN and wrestled great matches, teamed up with Tajiri against the FBI and other folks like that. Yeah, Mikey Whipwreck, definitely part of the heart and soul of ECW, and he's at my number 15 spot.
Okay.
All right, Dan, we're back around to you in the rotation. Let's round it out here.
I look at this, and I put the Pit Bulls in my honorable mention, which makes me feel kind of bad. I think, honestly, I probably took him out because the match Pit Bull number 2 had with Shane Douglas at Barely Legal was bad.
Yeah, that was rough.
I blame Paul Heyman for giving them 20 minutes.
Yeah. No, I mean, usually they hit their limitations, and they didn't in that case. In that same match where the Eliminators, they beat the Dudleys at that, I want to say. I mean, John Williams shit all over it, and I was like, I thought it was pretty damn cool. Although it was a four-minute spot fest, but I was like, shit, that was great, you know? So I was very close with the Pit Bulls, but I didn't put them in for that reason. You guys are making me feel kind of bad about it, but I'll stick with my
list.
Well,
good, you should feel bad.
I probably should. Sixteenth on my list was 911.
Yeah.
He was such a big part of those early shows. The whole crowd chanting 911. He beat up Doink the Clown. He beat up. I can't even remember all the. But every time they bring some, Chad Austin one week I know. They just bring out these people that would annoy the shit out of you, and then 911 would just come out and chokeslam them. I mean, like when they had the guy at November to Remember playing the Star Spangled Banner on the guitar, and he was so shitty. And 911 comes out, and they're you're not supposed to interrupt the Star Spangled Banner, but ECW. You know, he was kind of a one-note guy, and of course WCW bought him and brought him in as Big Al or whatever the hell.
Uh-huh.
Sort of the same. But he was over when he was over, and that's when I was starting to watch this shit, and I couldn't wait for 911 to chokeslam somebody, as silly as that might sound. So I don't know how much he drew, but this is where personal preference comes in, is that I got 911 16th. 17th, I put Steve Austin. Maybe that's a little unfair because he was just around for a cup of coffee, but kind of the things that you guys talked about Terry Funk lending credibility to ECW, in a lot of ways, I mean, Steve Austin, while he was there, put over Mikey Whipwreck, put over, or at least was in the match that Mikey won, put over Sandman. I don't know that he ever won a match while he was there. I mean, he only wrestled like three or four. But he gave, you know, interviews that were made it much CTV every week on ECW.
And he put over the title and he put over the company, too.
Oh, yeah. He was like the only title that's worth a damn. And you know, he did it, and at first you thought, oh, he just thinks his company's shit because he's too good for it. And then later he's like, I couldn't beat Mikey Whipwreck. I don't care what I was. I got to get back, and I got to prove that I'm the superstar everybody knows I could be.
Yep.
And, you know, even though he was only there for maybe 3 months, it was so good, I felt like it was deserving of a spot in the top 20. 18th, and, you know, I can separate the wrestler from the person, so this is where I go with it. I put Chris Benoit and Dean Malenko as part of what I consider to be the real triple threat, no offense to Bam Bam Bigelow and to Chris Candido, who were good, but that version of the triple threat I thought was excellent. And
mm-hmm.
the stuff they did with Public Enemy and Taz and Sabu,
mm-hmm.
you know, that was the night Sabu didn't show up and they brought in Rick Steiner, but that tables match, I bought that videotape, and I was so excited to see that match and a great deal of it. And, of course, I have all the other guys in my top 10, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
A great reason for that was the work that Dean Malenko and Chris Benoit did leading up to that match. So
mm-hmm.
I felt like they were deserving a spot in the top 20. Number 19, Stevie Richards. You guys hit the name. I mean, he was a main event wrestler for such a short period of time, I had a hard time putting him higher, but I struggle on where to put him. And you could certainly, you know, when we quantify this list, maybe that's what we'll do in our next show,
sure.
an overall list. You can certainly talk me into moving him up because I love that guy. I mean, his interviews were just fantastic, and his playoff of Raven was great. And one thing I'll say with Stevie Richards that's very hard to find, and if I could somehow post this damn thing on YouTube, that November Rain video they did before 95, they show Raven and Cactus Jack fighting in the ring. And in the background, you can see Stevie Richards with his arm around Beulah McGillicuddy.
Yeah.
Her, you know, you're so hot, I want you, whatever the hell he's
yeah.
saying. And the look on her face where she rolls her eyes at him
yeah.
is one of the funniest damn things I've ever seen on TV anywhere. And I was like, wow, she's more than, you know, obviously just incredibly hot. When you saw it, and maybe I should give her credit for it more than Stevie, but the way they both did it. And if you weren't watching it real carefully, you wouldn't see it. But once I saw that, I probably rewound it 10 times. It just cracked my ass up every time. And Stevie Richards led me to enjoy and laugh at ECW more than anybody else. And then the Dudley's 20th because I felt like I had to rate him, and I've talked about why I'm not a huge fan already, so
sure.
I won't take any more time with that.
Good.
Losing somebody's phone. I don't know. Is that me?
Yeah, I don't know. It sounds like somebody walked into somebody's riding the. It sounds like somebody's riding the bus.
So that concludes my top 20, and I could maybe do my honorable mention tomorrow just to keep it.
Sure. Up. All right, Dusty, you have a 16 through 20 for us, my friend.
Oh, yeah, I sure do, and the Dudleys are 16th. I couldn't rate him higher because, like Dan, I never really cared for him. I agreed that they did a lot of cheap heat stuff. You know, like, either fight the fan or shut up about it, you know? God.
And I added Joel Gertner a lot to their act. I thought Joel Gertner was a big part of their act, and I kind of separated the managers, too.
Sure.
Sure. I liked I liked when it was Bubba Ray and Big Dick and Chubby Dudley and Dances with Dudley as baby faces feuding against Diva. I like that better than the stuff they did later where they were all together.
Devon and Axel, right?
Against Devon and Axel, yes. And I've said this for 10 years now. They should have put the fucking double turn on the pay-per-view.
Yeah.
And because it was a pay-per-view quality angle and then had the Eliminators fight the gangsters who they were feuding with at the time.
Yep.
Would have been better for the pay-per-view. But
yep.
Whatever. That's the Dudleys. That's 16. 17, Chris Candido. 18, Bam Bam Bigelow. I preferred that version of the Triple Threat. Love all those guys. Love Candido to death. Very tragic that his career never blossomed the way it should have.
Yeah.
If it had been up to Cornette and Heyman, it would have. But, I mean, WWF was too busy thinking you look like Tony Little or something. Absolutely ridiculous. Bam Bam was the champion for a while. Obviously, his title reign didn't mean nearly as much as the guys I listed ahead of him. In fact, Heyman would start house shows with Bam Bam defending the title because it was never really the focus of the company. At number 19, I kind of cheated with this one. I put all the workers together, Benoit, Malenko, and Guerrero, because they all kind of meant equal to the company. It was, everybody talks about it as a different aspect for ECW, and I couldn't really justify putting one person ahead of any of the other two, so I grouped them together.
Yeah, and if we decide to do this, I'd have no trouble adding Eddie Guerrero to my list of two. They weren't all three a team. That's why I did it that way.
Yeah.
And then at number 20, just out of personal preference, the FBI always made me laugh. I really got a tickle out of them. Tommy Rich is fucking brilliant. Tracy Smothers. Even going back to J.T. Smith.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the black Italian guy.
One of the first tapes I got of ECW featured him prominently, and I was just captivated by the guy. So.
Yeah, I love the idea of the black Italian guy. And he would sing all the old Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin songs.
Dean Martin stuff, yeah, it was so good.
God, so good. All right. Let's see. Who was I going to mention? Another guy that I felt bad. Oh, well, just because you brought up Candido and you and I talked about this off air. I mentioned it earlier, too, and Dan, you talked about the Impact players. I really do feel bad that a guy that I liked as much as I like Candido, which I thought that he was friggin' hilarious. He was a great wrestler, but he was so funny and such a good promo that I just couldn't squeeze him into my top 20, but I wanted to mention his name one more time, too.
Yeah.
I put at my number 16, Justin Credible, another outcast. He had put in his time in WWF as PJ Walker and Aldo Montoya, the Portuguese Man of War. And when he had the opportunity to go to ECW, he took it and completely changed his character. Granted, he wore jean shorts, but then again, John Cena wears jean shorts now. Just a total dick. Just a little fucking wavy dickhead. And you hated him. And you almost loved to hate him, but you hated him even more than you loved to hate him. And he got involved in the summer feud with Jerry Lynn, and then he transitioned into a feud with Tommy Dreamer, became a legitimate title contender and champion after a while, and tag team champion with Lance Storm in a great team. Just incredible, definitely one of the better future Olive Garden waiters.
Had some good stuff with Sandman, didn't he?
I'm pretty sure. I remember the feud with Tommy Dreamer, but I'm sure he had a feud with Sandman, too. And I hate to say it, but
he did. Yeah,
he was the guy who drove Sandman out of the company.
Okay. Yeah, that's right. There's actually a time in ECW where some of that stuff to me is interchangeable. Like, as much as I liked the super crazy Tajiri, Takamichi Inoku, Little Guido matches, sometimes I have a hard time keeping track of them. It's kind of the same when it came to Justin Credible, Tommy Dreamer, Sandman.
Yeah.
I apologize if it blends together, but Credible at number 16. Number 17, 911. I agree completely. That was actually, he was another one of my favorite things about those early videos that I'd order. And I would send copy. I sent a copy to one of my friends, and he sent me a letter back. He's like, holy fucking shit, 911, choke slam this and that. And it was just so great. His music would kick in, and the crowd would go ape shit, and he'd choke slam a referee, or he'd choke slam Santa Claus, and it's just not something that you'd expect.
Yeah, that's right, Santa Claus.
Yeah.
Yep, I was going to bring it up if you didn't. Yep.
Yeah. No, it was just such a brilliant character. It's just, here, you know, with ECW, oops, we're about to present some bullshit that's never going to get over with the Philadelphia crowd.
No, it'd be a match. Two guys, and he'd just go kick the shit out of both of them.
Yep.
And Joey Styles, you talked about Joey earlier, and he'd be selling. He'd be like, well, yeah, you know, this isn't quite the ECW action we're going to get to later. And then, dun, 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 dun.
Yep. Oh, my! And then 911 would come out, and then eventually Styles would tell everyone, someone call Donnie Allen's mother and tell him he's not coming home, ever. 911 was fucking awesome. He was like the Gong Show of ECW.
Right.
I love that guy. Number
and 18, later, Heyman did the same thing with Sandman caning people.
Yes,
yeah.
That's true. To start the pay-per-views, let's say, yeah. Number 18, Axel Rotten, and I put in parentheses Ian Rotten, but Ian didn't have quite the career that Axel did in ECW. But, yeah, that was another one of those, like, late 94, early 95, once the Bad Breed had broken up, and they're having all those, like, barbed wire baseball bat matches and the Taipei Death matches, stuff like that. But Axel Rotten was, like, the hardest of the hardcore wrestlers in that era of ECW, when you, like, had the mat wrestling and you had the old school type of wrestling, and then you had like some of the more Memphis brawling, but then you had like this violent, hardcore, like pre-light tubes, but still foreign object style wrestling. I admit it was fun to watch.
Yep.
So that's Axel Rotten at 18. Number 19, I had to try to sell Jeremy on this over I Am earlier today, but I put Balls Mahoney at number 19. And I realized that he came in the later years of ECW, but here's a guy that I think encapsulates ECW in a lot of different ways. He was a hardcore wrestler. He was a brawler. He was the chair-swinging freak, and he had the personalized chairs. He had the mainstream music that everyone sang along with, the balls. We got the biggest Balls of them All theme music. And he had that name that just, you know, it pushed the envelope. Even Pro Wrestling Illustrated had to list him as B. Mahoney in their top 10.
Mahoney, yep.
Yep. So
made me go, like, Police Academy? Oh, they mean balls. Like, every time.
Yep. So, I can see where, you know, some people might argue, like, why didn't you put Benoit in there? Why didn't you put Candido if you love him so much? But there's just, again, there's something about Balls Mahoney that's just kind of that heart and soul of ECW thing. Like, you put him in a lineup with a guy like Sabu or a guy like, you know, Tommy Dreamer or something like that, and you can say, these guys are ECW wrestlers. And then
so
I put my number.
You loved him hard, and so.
That's right.
He wrestled for the title on one of the shows.
Yeah, he wrestled RVD for the TV title. Yeah, he was actually,
yeah.
That was another thing. He main evented one pay per view.
And he could wrestle. I mean, it was, you know, it wasn't bad.
Right, yeah. So, yeah, he had a little bit of in ring ability. So, yeah, he was.
Yeah, another one like Axel that's chronically underrated because
yep.
They could work.
Yeah.
Yep. Definitely. And then I kind of cheated here, too, with number 20 is actually kind of a 20 and 21 or 20A and 20B, whatever you want to call it. But Eddie Guerrero and Dean Malenko had such an amazing string of matches that – and then they got that big send-off when they had their last match and were going off to WCW, and they're on the shoulders of the rest of the roster.
Yep.
Like, it's hard for me to separate those two in my mind, and they were, like, the embodiment of the work rate of ECW at the time. And I might be inclined to put Benoit up in there, too. I did like the matches that he had. I specifically, like, have a match with him versus Al Snow from the double tables in 95 that I go back to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
oh,
excellent
God.
Excellent match. I remember seeing that on TV and just being like, shit. I mean,
yeah, my favorite part was when Benoit chops Al Snow, the referee recoils in horror, and Joey Styles says, and just so you know, we don't mic the rings here at ECW.
Yeah.
So I could be compelled with a good argument to put Benoit up in there, but Eddie Guerrero and Dean Malenko, that feud alone, I mean, that summed it up for me as far as the work rate portion
of
the
roster. Well, we actually do try to collaborate this, which I don't know if it's worth the effort, but I think we can agree to put all three of those as a worker quotient.
Yep. I think so.
Cool. WCW, the proof in the pudding, WCW's creative team, one of the ways that they could put Nitro on the map, hey, Guerrero versus Malenko.
Absolutely.
Yep. Exactly. So there you go. There are top 20 lists from the three of us. Again, I get the plan tomorrow is to discuss the chronology of ECW. We can go, but let's do our homework and go all the way back to Joel Goodhart's Tri-State Wrestling Association.
Oh, God. All right. I'll do my best.
And a year at a time, a couple bullet points at a time, we'll make our way to the dying days of ECW in early 2001. But in the meantime, I'm cool with signing off if you guys are.
I guess if I can, and I know we've been 2 hours, but are we fair in saying that if we were to have to try to come to a consensus number one, I guess it would have to be either Shane Douglas or Sandman, and I don't know. We could talk about that tomorrow. If you go by little points, then it would be a tie.
Sandman was number two or number three on
everybody's list. That's the thing.
Right, yep.
But Shane Douglas was top. He was lowest. He was fourth on mine. He was first on yours and second on Eric's. So
right.
We'll call them co-number ones for now, I guess. If you did it by a point system, that's what it would be.
Yeah.
So we can leave it at that. It might just be a good way to close up, I guess.
Hey, and you know what? Woman's going to come and cane us anyway. Oh, shit. I keep forgetting she's dead. We could talk about that, too, tomorrow. Huh? How many of the people we talked about?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. Let's see. Dan, thanks for doing the show. And Dusty, do you want to take the reins of signing off?
All right. Well, I'm Dusty Gugan. Thanks for listening.